Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God."
When Andrew told me that I was preaching on the topic tonight, which is the faith to believe, I was immediately taken back to my childhood, sitting on the couch with my brothers and watching Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Anyone seen that? It's classic Spielberg, classic Ford, Harrison Ford. I'm about to show you a clip from it. It's a scene where Indiana Jones has just had to overcome all these trials that had been thrown at him in order to gain the Holy Grail and to save his father from death. And he finds himself in this clip up against the hardest of all of those trials. So let's have a look.
Only in the leap from the lion's head will he prove his worth. Impossible. Nobody can jump this.
Indy! Indy, you must hurry! Come quickly!
It's a leap of faith.
So good. The reason I thought about this clip is pretty obvious, right? When it comes to faith, Indiana Jones is faced with the quintessential faith dilemma. He must step out into the abyss and just hope that there will be something there that is going to take his step and stop him from falling to his death. Hebrews 11, which we talked about last week, Hebrews 11 verse 1 to 3, I think, says, "Now faith is being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you cannot see." That's faith. That's the Bible's description of faith. That's belief. And Indiana's father in the clip is saying, "You must believe, boy. You must believe." And this is just a clip from a movie, obviously. It's a story, right? Some screenplay writer conjured the story up in their head and they gave it to a producer who gave it to a director and so on. Yet the story that we're looking at tonight, first of all, is no story. Which is a little challenging for some of us because some of us have grown up hearing the story of Peter walking on the water, Jesus calling him out from the boat, and you know, we've kind of passed it off as like a whimsical fairy tale because we've become numb to it over time. Heard it in Sunday school and all of that. But actually, this is historical truth. If you believe the Bible, it's historical truth seen and witnessed by real people in time and history and written down so that we can recall it because it's important. And secondly, though Indiana Jones, he believes in this clip, he takes a step of faith. We have no idea really what he's actually believing in, what he thinks is actually going to save him from falling. Could be anything. But this passage tonight isn't vague at all when it comes to telling us who we should be believing in. It's very clear. And it's not belief in yourself. It's not your belief in your own ability to overcome. It's not listening to that little voice inside of you. It is faith and belief in Jesus. That's obvious in the passage. And even more specifically, this passage tells us that we are to have faith in Jesus' power. And in fact, Jesus himself is inviting us to have faith in his power. The disciples in the book of Matthew had been on a gradual journey of having faith in Jesus' power. Up until this point, they'd heard a lot of Jesus' teachings about the kingdom. They'd seen him heal tons of people, exorcise tons of demons. And just before this passage, they probably witnessed one of Jesus' most powerful acts, and that was feeding 5,000 people with a few loaves and fishes. But even after this, they were still on a journey of faith. And most of us are on a journey as well, right? None of us have perfectly arrived at this perfect place of faith. Because as humans, we are very tough nuts to crack when it comes to believing in anything, really. Especially believing in something wholeheartedly, giving our lives for something. And to be honest, when it comes to God, it's difficult. He's unseen. We can't see him. That complicates things. So we usually need something really special from God to break into our frightened and unbelieving hearts and to be aroused to true belief and true faith in his power. But Jesus is inviting us, each one of us, to discover it. He is. Just like he wanted his disciples to truly get who he actually was, to get who he was and know his incredible power to do the impossible. So here in Matthew 14, verse 22, if you've got your Bibles, we see in verse 22, Jesus starts to set a course of events in motion, which will end up giving his disciples a very clear opportunity to respond to his power and believe in him. It says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because of the wind. Now here you see there's so much intentionality from Jesus. He makes all his disciples get into a boat and go ahead of him to the other side of this massive lake. That's weird. Jesus then bides his time, spends a chunk of that time up on a mountain praying and filling up on God. And then a storm just happens to come over the boat where the disciples are alone on the lake. As if Jesus didn't know that there was a storm, right? This is Jesus setting up his disciples for a chance to respond to his power. A chance for them to exercise their belief muscles in him. And now that he's set the scene, here's the bit that we're all familiar with. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Jesus is inviting us to have faith in his power. And specifically tonight, he's inviting us to have faith in his power over chaos. And chaos is the opposite of order, right? When there's no order, no stability, when things are in a mess, then they're chaotic. And sometimes our lives can feel absolutely chaotic, can't they? When we think we've got everything, you know, lined up perfectly in a row, going along just the way that we want, and bam, something hits us and everything just gets thrown out of whack. Have you experienced that before? Many of us have. I know I have over the last couple of years. In the first century, people also experienced chaos, and they didn't like it either. And you know what the strongest symbol of chaos for them was? The thing that best represented the forces of chaos in the world? It was the water. Because people saw and interpreted the world in different ways to the way that we do in the 21st century. We see most things through a scientific lens. But people in the first century were superstitious, and they pretty much saw everything through a religious or spiritual lens, especially first century Jews. For them, the water, the ocean, the lake wasn't just H2O with salt in it churned up. It was this uncontrollable, alive, untamable thing that had no order whatsoever. They really believed it was something to be feared. They thought that real ancient monsters lived beneath it. They thought that spirits dwelled within it, and Hades. So when these disciples were stuck in this storm, being absolutely belted and feeling the full ferocity of this alive, chaotic beast that they were in, scared out of their brains, and they see Jesus, who they were just with, strolling on top of this thing, on top of the water, what do you think that said to them? What do you think that told them about who Jesus was? After they got over the fact that he wasn't a ghost, I reckon their minds would have been drawn, as Jews in the first century, their minds would have been drawn to a psalm, a really important psalm called Psalm 77. And that psalm says, listen to these words, "The waters saw you, God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen." This psalm is describing the only one who can cause the greatest symbol of chaos to any Jew to quiver with fear. And that's God. God is the one who parted the Red Sea, right? That's what Jews would have been thinking about. So these guys in the boat, seeing Jesus come towards them, would have been going, "I can't believe I'm seeing this. I am actually witnessing God with my own eyes." And then they hear Jesus' voice call out from within the storm. And what he says is even more shocking. And I love what he says here. And I also do not like how the NIV has translated this, because if you look at the original Greek, not that I'm a Greek scholar or anything like that, but if you look at the Greek, what Jesus says to the disciples is, in Greek, "Take courage, or do not fear." And then he says a combination of words in Greek, "ego eimi." And if you translate that literally, it's not "it is I." That's like saying, "it's me, guys. I'm just strolling across the water." It's a very weak translation. "Ego eimi," literally translated, says, "I am." And a quick Bible revision moment. Remember Moses at the burning bush? God tells Moses to go to Egypt, and Moses goes, "Well, when I get to Pharaoh, who shall I tell him has sent me?" And God says from the burning bush, "I am. Tell him I am sent you." Because that's the name of God. That's Yahweh. I am. So Jesus, as he strolls over the waters of chaos, is showing his disciples and showing us that, yeah, you are witnessing God, no doubt whatsoever. So you don't need to fear. I am. And my power is more than enough to tame whatever you think is chaotic in your life. Of course he can command those things. Think about who he actually is. And Jesus is inviting us to believe in that unimaginable power that he has over chaos. And what Jesus is really after is a response. In 1921, there was a couple in Australia who were seeking God, seeking their will for, seeking his will for their life. They were praying earnestly, and they believed that they heard God's voice. They heard Jesus' invitation for them to have faith in his power and to go towards him. And they felt like Jesus was calling them to be full-time missionaries in China. The only problem was they had a three-month-year-old baby boy, and he was really sick. So they brought him to the doctor, and they told the doctor of their plans to go to China, and the doctor just said straight up, he said, if you take your boy on the journey to China, he's going to die. Absolutely, he's going to die. So this couple were left with a choice. What do they do? Do they remain obedient and listen to Jesus' call, his invitation for them to trust in his power, even over the chaotic things of life, and this was truly chaotic for them? Or do they listen to the doctor and stay where they are? They ended up listening to God and going to China, and they got on a boat and sailed for weeks and weeks, and by the time that they got to China, God had graciously spared their child. And not only that, but he had brought him to full healing. And I'm grateful for that, because that couple were my great-grandparents and that little boy was my pa. So thanks God for answering that so that I can exist. Jesus is after our response. Remember, he set up this entire scenario as a test for his disciples, to give them a chance to respond to his power. So, who's going to stand up? Who's going to respond? And there's no surprises that Peter stands up and he goes, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. And Jesus replies, come. And for a first century Jew to do this, it is incredible. You know, all the disciples were in the same boat. They saw exactly the same thing that Peter was seeing. They heard Jesus say the same things that he said about himself, but Peter was the only one to actually respond. And that's exactly what real faith is. It's never just being given a piece of incredible revelation and doing nothing with it. That's not faith. True faith is a response to the incredible revelation that we have been given through Jesus. So Peter, in that crazy moment, realized this is so incredible what I'm seeing right now. This is too life-changing for me to just stay in the boat. I've got to respond. And he does. He steps out and walks towards Jesus. I always try to picture here what Peter would have actually been seeing. You know, stepping out of the boat just behind him, the disciples probably going, what are you doing? And then, you know, the chaos of the waters beneath him and, you know, the sheer wonder that he would have been feeling of like standing on top of the waves. Would have been incredible. And then there was Jesus in front of him, and who knows what Jesus would have actually been standing like. We used to like pictures like this where Jesus is like all angelic and just kind of floating there. But maybe, I'm just guessing, but maybe he was like, come on, Peter. Come on, come to me. You can do it. Believe in me. You're nearly there. Come to me. And that picture of Jesus beckoning for us to trust in his power in the midst of chaos, that should be just as real for us in the chaos that we so often find ourselves in life. Jesus is just as real, just as powerful, and just as gracious in his summoning to us, his invitation for us to believe in him, believe that he's more powerful than those things, more powerful than the obstacles that seem to be in our way from obeying God's call. more powerful than our sickness, more powerful than cancer, more powerful than what your friends are saying against you, more powerful than the pressures that you find at work, your mortgage. It goes on and on. Jesus is more powerful. He just is. And he loves to honor the fact that we would step out of the boat and trust him. As Peter didn't hold himself up on the waves as he walked, he didn't suddenly conjure up some ability to be able to walk on water. It was Jesus' power that held him there. Jesus was honoring Peter's faith by commanding the waves to bear his weight. Because that's what he does. He honors our faith. He'll honor your faith. You step out, believe in his power over chaos. He will hold you up in the midst of what you're going through. But the forces of chaos can be frightening. And Peter, we know, gets overcome by something that overcomes a lot of us a lot of the time, unbelief. And because of that unbelief, he starts to sink and he cries out, "Lord, save me." And Jesus disappears from Peter's vision and he sinks beneath the waves. But Jesus is also inviting us to have faith in his power over our unbelief. Unbelief is really caused by a few idols that are lodged in the human heart. The first idol that can cause unbelief in Jesus and his power is the idol of control. Now, Andrew talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We love control as human beings. But the problem is that belief in Jesus, the unseen God, is an out-of-control experience completely, all the time. And we don't like that. We don't like giving over control of our lives to anyone, let alone someone we can't see. But we don't like the fact that we feel out of control when things are chaotic in our lives either. But even then, because of that idol lodged in our heart, we find it so hard to give over control to the one who truly is powerful, Jesus. It's firmly in there. The other idol that can cause unbelief is the idol of comfort. I don't have these up on the screen or anything, so you're just going to have to remember what I'm saying. Control and comfort. Now, the idol of comfort is probably the idol that prevented the other disciples from getting out of the boat, like Peter did. They were probably like, "It's cozy in here, and that does not look like a fun thing to do." It's the idol that gives us a sense of retaining some sense of security. But the weird thing is, unbelief, for some twisted reason, feels very comfortable. It's like a little cozy nook that we like to shrink inside of, where we don't have to think about risk or think about faith. Think about stepping out for Jesus, the big questions of life. We love comfort. We love retracting back into it. And when these idols are challenged, then a protection mechanism pops up. And that protection mechanism is fear. Fear is the thing that keeps those idols lodged in our heart. It's the fear of being out of control, the fear of losing our comfort and security. Because we don't want to give up those idols. And this fear starts telling us that even though we might experience an incredible revelation about Jesus, still, he's not powerful enough to overcome what you're going through. He's not powerful enough to overcome the obstacles. We start to rationalize Jesus out of our life. It's completely out of the picture, solely to keep those idols safe. That's what fear does. And that means that if we're completely hindered by fear and unbelief, we'll never get out of the boat and respond by faith to Jesus in the first place. But Jesus is more powerful than our unbelief. So when Peter was struck by this sudden urge of unbelief and lost sight of Jesus, what did Jesus do? Did he go, "No, you didn't believe enough, Peter. Sorry, mate"? It's not what he did. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Jesus wants us to let go of our idols, but if we don't, he reaches out his hand and saves us. But he will ask us a question. Why? why did you doubt? You know who I am. You've seen what I can do, so why are you doubting? It doesn't make sense. That's a pretty deep and personal question to be asked by the God of the universe, I think. And the truth is, Jesus knows exactly why we doubt his power. He already knows that. He knows the exact fears that are stopping us from giving over our control and comfort to him. He can see it. And when he's asking us, why did you doubt? He's actually trying to bring something up in us. He's getting us to think about something. It's like he's reaching out and he's asking us why. He's reaching out and putting his finger on the idols that we have lodged in our heart. And he's touching them and it's painful. He'll touch that idol so it hurts, so that you have no choice but to go, ah, it's the control. I can't give over my control. Or, ah, it's the comfort. Maybe that's happening for you tonight. Jesus, through his Spirit, is pushing on those idols, trying to get you to look at them. It's asking you why. Why are you doubting? And he wants to move and partner with you in overcoming them. He wants to release us from our unbelief. Because he knows that you can't truly live a faith-filled life as his disciple if you're never going to get out of the boat, if you're never going to take a step of faith and trust in his power over the chaotic things of life. In fact, Christians aren't supposed to be a people who have any control or comfort over their lives whatsoever. We're not. The expectation of God is that we hand those things over to him, hand those idols over to him when we take Jesus into our life. He invites us to have faith in his power over chaos, over our unbelief, to believe in him, to take a real step, trusting in him as the great I am, the God of extreme unthinkable power who is able and so wanting to guide you through the waves. And remember I said that the disciples had been on a journey of faith. At the end of this event, all of them, Jesus got back in the boat and all of them just fell down on their faces before him. I am in human flesh, and they worshipped him. And maybe that was the point where they finally let go of their idols. And maybe they finally believed in him. As the worship team come up, I'm going to give you an opportunity tonight to symbolically, spiritually respond to Jesus' invitation for you to believe in his power. I prayed at the beginning of the sermon that we would experience God's power tonight. And those weren't just words. That is our prayer tonight, that we would experience his power. So over here you can see that we've got the cross and we've got water. And we've got some post-it notes here. And as we worship in this song and remain in an attitude of prayer, if you feel led, maybe you can come out and write on one of these post-it notes and maybe write something that you feel is chaotic in life at the moment, something that you feel like God is calling you out to trust him in. No matter what it is, maybe it's sickness, maybe it's something that's going on with your loved one, family issues, whatever it is. I just invite you to come out as the song plays and to write that down. Or maybe it's something that you feel like God is calling you to do for him and his kingdom. Yet you feel like there are obstacles in the way and it's scary. And maybe you feel prompted tonight that Jesus is really calling you to give over your idol of comfort and control to him. So write those things on the post-it notes and then just take a journey to the cross through the water symbolically in an attitude of prayer, and then stick the post-it note on the cross and just have a moment with God and ask him really deeply, ask him to increase your faith to believe in him.